This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
The Pope declared that the Roman Catholic Church in the United States is trapped in a suicidal attitude. In addition to that, it appears that President Joe Biden will sign away America's powers to the World Health Organization and its Director General, Tedros, through an executive agreement to link the United States to a pair of treaties under discussion related to worldwide pandemics. In addition to that, we have this article from the Jerusalem Post today. Jews are raising the alarm. What alarm is that? Well, Jews are frequently compared to the proverbial canary in the coal mine, an enduring signal for when the world is failing to meet its obligations in tackling bigotry. And it's never been clearer just how widely that truism is because of what we're seeing with massive anti-Semitism today, only to be followed by Christian persecution tomorrow. So I welcome you to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. It's conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. And today, as we take a look at just these three items, we see that the pressure is building worldwide to compel every man, woman, and child into a particular mold. Even as we're hearing words, for instance, from the World Tribune, America, the end of the beginning, or the end. Yesterday, we had a program dealing with America and its paganism, has become a paganistic nation. Then we find also that the Prime Minister of Slovakia was shot and almost killed. Why? Because he's resisting globalism. All of these things, friends, are telling us something that perhaps we didn't want to hear. What is that? That globalism is the deal for today. Globalism is indeed the intention of the world and the world's leaders, and you dare not resist. You may be shot. You may have massive anti-Semitism, persecution, and a treaty that would take away your sovereignty as a nation and as individual peoples. And therefore, you become nothing but a number. Does that sound good to you? Does that sound like something that would be helpful in bringing about law and order and joy and happiness and fulfillment? I don't think so. But that's what's coming. That's exactly what the leaders of our world have in mind. And when John Kerry, former presidential candidate, and the environmental czar for Joseph Biden, the current president of the United States, declared at the inauguration of President Biden that indicated that he would be the, shall we say, the trigger leader to move the entire world toward the Great Reset and the new global order established and declared for 2030. So that's what we're talking about here today on Viewpoint. I'm glad that you've joined us. Again, it's always conversation with conviction, talk that transforms. And the reason it's talk that transforms is because today, as we talk about this, we have to make decisions. When you have to make decisions, you're either going to make decisions for some kind of destiny, either for a destiny that's pleasing to God or a destiny that doesn't trust in God and trusts everything else but God. That's really where we are today. So the concept, the very concept of a new world order, of a new global order, of the 2030 reset or whatever the Great Reset, all of these different terms, the very concept of these is contrary to God's biblical order. How do we know that? It takes us back to Genesis chapter 11. In Genesis chapter 11, as you probably well know, we have the first record of the building of the Tower of Babel. And there it was a great leader of the world. His name was Nimrod. And because of his great popularity and great leadership skills, he coordinated and coalesced the then known world, rather than to separate into various nations that God had specifically ordained, he caused them, on the contrary, to amalgamate their efforts, to join together, to build a tower that would lead up unto heaven, and that they would put their trust there rather than in the God of heaven. And so God said, look, these people are all speaking the same language, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they imagine to do. And so he confounded the language, hence Babel. They babbled, he confounded the language, and they were no longer able to work together. And so today, the idea is, well, let's reorganize. Let's reorganize, and we can use modern technology, and we can all speak the same thing. We can all speak the same thing, and we can rehabilitate the spirit of the Tower of Babel, and we can have a wonderful utopian global world order. And how wonderful that will be. All the problems of humankind will be solved. All the needs will be met, as Klaus Schwab, heading up the World Economic Forum, said, you'll own nothing, but you'll be happy about it. Well, I'm not quite sure how Americans would be happy about owning nothing and be happy about it, but in any event, that's his viewpoint. And indeed, if all your needs are met and you're being provided for from cradle to grave by all the basic needs that you have, you'll have no worries, you'll have no frets, you won't have to trust anybody but whoever's heading up the new world order. Well, we know from Scripture that there is going to be one individual who will end up heading that new world order up, that global order, however you want to denominate it or label it. And his name, his title, is Antichrist, the counterfeit Christ. And so what we're looking at today is from Nimrod to the New World Order, and it has something to do with the ruling of the Temple Mount. It has something to do with rebelling, because actually Nimrod's name, the son of Cush, was a hunter and a builder of the kingdom of Babel. He inspired the disobedient sons of Noah to build a tower, and his name means we shall rebel. That's the meaning of the name Nimrod. We shall rebel. Well, now that's beginning to sound somewhat familiar then, when we understand that this concept of a new world order, of a new global order, has to do with human beings rebelling against the God who made and preserved us a nation, and the God who created humankind in his image, and expecting us to follow his will and his word and his ways. So all of that sets the tone, the background for the balance of today's program. And again, it's always a delight to be able to come before you to talk about the things that matter most, not only for us here in America, but for all over the world, particularly Christians. 99% of those who listen to this program claim to be Bible-believing Christians, and so we're directing our attention there to disciple for destiny, to strengthen, to encourage, to prepare, and yes, even when necessary, to allow the Holy Spirit to convict. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
We used to sing a song, particularly when I was younger, "This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. The angels beckon me to heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore." Well, it's getting more and more like that, isn't it? When our guest yesterday, a Roman Catholic, told us that America has become essentially a pagan nation, you know we're in trouble. when another writer from the World Tribune today says America is at the end of the beginning or the end of the end. In other words, things aren't going well and things are declining rapidly. Well, if America didn't continue to exist, what would replace it? Maybe what they have in mind is getting rid of America as it was founded and replace it with a new global order. Isn't that what Mr. Biden has in mind? Isn't that what he's been talking about? Isn't that what the Democrat Party has been talking about in this country? Isn't that what the blue states, virtually all of whom have abandoned the fear of the Lord and are choosing to worship the power of government? Isn't that what they have in mind? Indeed it is. Isn't that the reason why they hate Mr. Trump so much? Not because of his hair color, not because of anything other than the fact that he is opposed to globalism. He says, if I'm going to be president of the United States, I'm here to try to make my country prosperous and to do the best that I can for the American people. But those that are opposing him say, no, we're not about the American people anymore. We're trying to tear down the whole allegiance to the country. We're trying to raise up young people who don't have any allegiance to the country so that we can merge them all into a new global order. Won't that be wonderful? Won't that be cool? Won't it be great when we just don't have to worry about nations anymore? We don't have to be concerned about sovereignty. We don't have to be concerned. We'll just have one grand utopian world government, and it will be so wonderful and so peaceful. Well, apparently, there are going to be 10 regional governments, governors over such a new world order, as the Bible lays out in the book of Daniel. And ultimately, they will delegate their responsibility to a fellow by the name of, well, we don't know what his name is, but we know what his title is, Antichrist. He's a counterfeit Christ figure. He is anti-everything that Christ stood for, anti-everything that God the Father stands for, because Christ represented the Father. He said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. I and the Father are one. I only do what the Father says to do. I only say what he says to say. Therefore, they oppose him because he opposes a one-world government. I begin to get the picture. It's not really that hard to figure out, to understand. The problem is we don't really kind of want to believe it. I mean, we live in America. We think that everything is wonderful. Everything still seems relatively good, even though we see it disappearing right before our eyes. And yet, we just can't bear to admit or believe what is taking place. So why would we discuss it? Well, the purpose of discussing it is not to, shall we say, wring our hands in despair. It's not for us to whine and complain. It's for us to be prepared. That's why Jesus, in his addresses to the various people, the Apostle Paul, the Apostle Peter, the Apostle John, the Apostle James, they all addressed the life of the people in the context of an empire that was very ungodly and that then ruled the world. It was the then largest global empire ever. It was called the Roman Empire. Speaking of Roman, that's the reason why when the Pope, Pope Francis, just came out with his statement a few hours ago that his conservative critics within the Roman Catholic Church in the United States are trapped in a suicidal attitude. That didn't just take place. That didn't just happen in one news article. I have in front of me at least a dozen such news articles, in fact, more than that, that are all quoting the Pope. What did he mean? What were the implications of what he said? I'm going to tell you what they are. You may not like it if you're a practicing Roman Catholic. You may not like what I'm about to say, but it's not about you. It's about him. It's about the Vatican. It's about the vision, the papal vision of the world. The papal vision of the world is that the Pope actually already is the ruler of the world. That's the papal vision of the world. That the Pope is the ruler of the world, not only of people who claim to be part of the Roman Catholic Church, but also of all other governments and rulers. He wears the crown of ultimate rulership over the world. If you don't understand that, you might want to get a copy of my book, Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter. You might also want to get a copy of my book, Messiah, Unveiling the Mystery of the Ages. But particularly Antichrist, it would help you to understand the depths of this. Also the book, King of the Mountain. King of the Mountain, $15 on our website. Antichrist, $20 on our website. Messiah, I think it's $20 on our website. All of those are available, and they will help you to understand much more deeply what we're dealing with now and you, how you and I must respond in our own hearts and lives, in how we teach and prepare our children and our grandchildren, how pastors need to come to grips with these issues and begin to overtly and boldly, yes, lovingly, but boldly prepare the people under their, who are trusting them to tell them the truth, to prepare their hearts for the coming of the Lord. Because these things that we're talking about now are going to happen before the coming of the Lord. They are happening, aren't they? Jesus hasn't come yet, has he? No. Are these things happening? Yes, they are. Are they going to continue to happen? Yes. Has the Jewish people been raptured yet? No. Have any Christians been raptured yet? No. No. We're going to have to endure these things until God, in his justice, decides that it's time to pour out his wrath on the children of disobedience. And just before that happens, then he will deliver his true followers, his true saints that are obeying his voice, following his will, have embraced Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, and are obeying his voice and doing his will. They will be delivered in an event called the rapture, because God has not appointed true followers of Jesus Christ to the wrath of God. He has not promised to deliver true followers of Jesus Christ from the wrath of man. Because if that were true, then all of the warnings of Jesus and Paul and Peter and James concerning persecution would be irrelevant, wouldn't they? It would make them all irrelevant. In fact, it would make them liars, false prophets. And we know they're not liars, they're not false prophets. So the problem is not with them, it's with us and what we choose to believe. So when Pope Francis comes out and he says that conservative critics have a suicidal attitude, what does he really mean by that? Here's what I believe he means. If you oppose his views, in which he has sought increasingly over the past several years to diminish the clear teaching of the Roman Catholic Church historically, and to, shall we say, extend exceptions to people who are divorced and who are remarried, and to homosexuals and transgenders and all of these other things that are radically contrary to the word, will, and way of God, particularly as expressed in his word and as expressed historically by the Roman Catholic Church and its doctrine. He doesn't like that. And he doesn't like anybody who resists what he's trying to do. But why is he doing that? That's the real issue. It's not that he is doing it, it's why he's doing it. And here's the reason. He is doing everything he can during his reign to seduce the maximum number of people under the papal wings, the mothering wings of the Roman Catholic Church, but particularly under the Vatican or papal rulership. That's what we're really talking about. In other words, he sees himself as the single religious leader to choreograph the New World Order. That's the reason why he chose to establish this new amazing structure out there in the Middle East, not in Israel, but there in Arab territory, where the centers of Judaism and Islam and Christianity are all there, three buildings designed to kind of unify and make everybody feel good, uniting those religions in a way that the world can be brought together under the mothering wings of the papacy. That's what it's all about. If you understand that, you can understand why he thinks and says that his critics, that is, those who are trying to preserve the essence of biblical teaching, have a suicidal attitude. Because from his viewpoint, you see, he believes that that's taking away from the opportunity to develop this wonderful, magnificent, ultimate global order under the religious domination of the Pope. That's the view. He also, and not just he, but his predecessors for the past 25 years have been seeking to take over every single primary spot in Israel. The very places where Jesus trod, including the Temple Mount. And if you want to find out more about that, you'll read my book, King of the Mountain. Because it said that he who rules the Temple Mount rules the world. So it's about the Temple Mount ultimately, because that's deemed to be the place, 37 acres that are of price, they're priceless acres, because they symbolize to the rulers of the world, and particularly to Muslims and also to the papacy, the rulership of the world. That's their goal. The Muslims have already declared they intend to rule the world from the Temple Mount. The papacy has already declared it intends to rule the world from the Papal Mount, from the Temple Mount. Are we beginning to see how all of these things line up together? Ultimately, friends, it's about globalism. So when Slovakia's prime minister, just a few days ago, was shot multiple times in an assassination attempt, who was it that tried to assassinate him? A fella who was radical globalist. Because Slovakia's prime minister, Robert Fico, was radically against globalism. He believed that nations should retain their individual sovereignty, just like God declared in the book of Genesis. But he's been called Slovakia's Trump because of his opposition to mass migration to Slovakia and criticisms of elections as related to globalism. He is a staunch foe of globalism. And George Soros has been doing everything he can to get rid of him because George Soros is a consummate globalist. I'm beginning to get the picture. All of these things are tied together, friends, including the massive anti-Semitism against the Jews. We'll talk more about that when we get back. Stay tuned.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
The world has become and is becoming Babylon. We'll see more about that as we move forward in the program here today on Viewpoint. So good to have you join us as we talk about globalism and how the developments taking place in front of us, while they seem to be disconnected, are actually connected by one thread, and that is the pursuit of globalism. That is the thread that connects them. If we do not understand that, if we cannot connect the dots, then all of these things are meaningless. They're just happenings, random happenings. No, they're not just random happenings. They're happening in a direct, almost a linear pursuit to establish a one world global order. Whether you want to call it through the agency of a great reset, whatever you want to call it, it all is moving in exactly the same direction. Now, I indicated that we would talk about the matter of the anti-Semitism. An article came out with the Jerusalem Post today. First, they came for the Jews, but then. And Jews are raising the alarm. It's like the canary is singing, but who's listening? In 2016, the British chief rabbi, Ephraim Mervis, wrote that Jews are frequently compared to the proverbial canary in the coal mine, an enduring signal for when the world is failing to meet its obligations in tackling bigotry and so on. Well, that was 8 years ago, before October 7th. The largest single shedding of Jewish blood since the end of the Holocaust, October 7th, and before Jews became unwelcome on university campuses, in organizational structures, and on the streets in scenes eerily reminiscent of the 1930s in Germany. So just like that, we see that what started with the Jews did not end with the Jews. The Holocaust was the systematic annihilation of 6 million Jews, a singular event in modern history, but it was also part of a bloody maelstrom and frenzy of hate, intolerance, and carnage that engulfed much of the world and led to the deaths of tens of millions of people. And so we're witnessing today across the globe many of exactly the same elements that led to the destruction of European Jewry. So the Jews are being targeted not only by so-called the extreme right, but the extreme left, and radical Islamists, but also by mainstream figures in the political, diplomatic, multilateral, NGO, academic, and cultural spheres in a way reserved for no other community or minority at present. But we're seeing the same signs now multiplying toward Christians. Just look what happened when a National Football League fella spoke in St. Louis to a Christian college, a Catholic Christian college, and talked about basic Christian values for the family. And he has been mocked, derided, even by leadership within St. Louis, where he came from, and by the NFL itself. Why? He's not a Jew. He's a Christian, and he's not afraid to stand up for biblical Christian values. And in doing so, the whole world comes against him, to the point where the Attorney General now in Missouri is coming out swinging, so to speak, to protect him and those like him, perhaps you and me and so on, who would stand for biblical truth. So it's not just the Jews, my friends. The Jews just get the first lashing. And then behind that come the Gentile believers. Jews are being demonized by those who claim to stand with every other oppressed people or community. However, their calls for the erasure and destruction of the ancestral and indigenous homeland of the Jewish people and their praise of mass murderers while making common cause with misogynist anti-LGBTQ extremists show that beyond their woke veneer lies a pure hatred of Jews. And behind their woke behavior lies a pure hatred of Christians as well. So the canary is in the coal mine, but it's singing and screaming, says this article coming from the Jerusalem Post. And already on campuses in North America, we see the same people who call for the destruction of the Jewish state chanting death to America. Why? Because America historically has stood for everything that is contrary to globalism. It has stood for basic, fundamental Christian values, biblical values, even our legal system. And they despise it. They don't want any kind of control. They don't want biblical control. They don't want a constitution that limits what they can do. They want a free-for-all to do whatever they want to do. They want to live as a purely pagan people. So, we're looking at a situation that's developing where Israel then becomes the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, in one major way to signal the massive move to globalism. Now you say, well, wait a minute. What does this have to do with globalism? Here's the deal. Israel, from the viewpoint of the globalists, is an impossible barrier to globalism. The Jewish people, by definition, having been supposedly chosen by God, stand in the way of the spirit of globalism intended to unite all peoples without any special chosenness, and the whole idea that they might be chosen people is intolerable to the globalistic world. In the same way, the principles of the founding of the United States of America, even with the tremendous drift that we have seen over these years, is still so in-your-face unacceptable to the globalists who reject the whole concept of the fear of the Lord, who reject the whole concept of the God of creation, who reject the whole concept of a people that would worship God and honor him. No, they have embraced the spirit of the French Revolution. They think they're going to create liberty, equality, and fraternity, the same catcall cry of the French Revolution, by dismissing, unchristianizing, de-Christianizing America, de-Judaizing Israel, and thereby eliminating those two great opponents and oppositions to the new global order. Believe me, that's what they're doing. That's what it's about. They're not saying that in so many words, but that is what it's about. That's the motivation behind, because otherwise there would not be such intensity, such vehemence. And if you think that we've seen the end of this, friends, we're just at the beginning. The book of Zechariah tells us that 2/3 of the Jewish people are going to lose their lives in this end time opposition to Jews. The Bible also tells us that massive Christian persecution is going to take place in the same way and for the same reasons. Jesus said, if they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. The Apostle Paul talked about that. He said, all who live truly live godly in Christ Jesus are going to suffer persecution. Now, we're not seeing too much of it today. We saw some of it, a certain kind of persecution coming against the NFL player that spoke to that college, that Catholic college, and has received nothing but vitriolic retribution from the cultures out there. It's like a war zone. It's a civil war that isn't civil. Somebody is going to pay. They intend somebody is going to pay, and it's going to be the Jew and it's going to be the Christian, because you guys stand in the way of our goal. So the Pope Francis, wants to diminish that feeling. So he wants to ingratiate himself to the broader pagan, non-believing world, believing that he can, claiming to be the great moral authority, religious moral authority of the world, that he can choreograph all of these forces, and he will come out as the religious head of the new global order. Would you like to know what's going to happen to that effort? God tells us very plainly. You can read about it in Revelation chapter 17. Revelation chapter 17 tells us exactly what's going to happen ultimately. And it ain't going to be pretty. But in the meantime, you and I have to endure. We have to stand, and having done all to stand, having our loins girt about with truth, having on the breastplate of righteousness, and we want not intentionally to stir up animosity or trouble, but neither do we want to shrink in the face of the battle. We want to be like that NFL player who spoke boldly and plainly, notwithstanding what the rabid response to him would be. He wasn't angry, he wasn't bitter, he just spoke the truth. Simply, and he was willing to take the backlash. Are you? You see, it is coming, and we need to be prepared. That's why I wrote the book, When Persecution Comes. Preparing hearts for perilous times. Today, just before broadcast, we received the final rendition of the cover. And before the end of the day today, I'm anticipating receiving the first typeset version of the book. Pray for us in that regard. We'll be back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
It's a gripping cover, the cover of When Persecution Comes. And I want to just repeat, since it's been a week or two since we've mentioned this, the Persecution Project. And many of you have responded so wonderfully and faithfully to our not so much a plea, but an opportunity to become part of that persecution project. And here's what it is if you are not familiar with it. For your gift of $250 to Save America Ministries today or whenever in the next few days or week, we will provide to you when the book comes out in August. That's what we're aiming for, around mid-August. When it comes out, we will send you 25 copies of that book for the purpose of you being God's hand extended to place that message, like an epistle. You're going to place that epistle, that message, in the hands, in the possession of people that you've been praying for, that God would lead you to give that book to, so that their hearts and lives can be touched. So, in fact, you then become an agent or a hand of God extended to others. So it doesn't just come from this ministry. You're becoming an agent in and of yourself. This is a message that needs to get out, and it needs to get out very, very quickly. Just yesterday, a listener then talked to me again. Can't you get it out more quickly? No, we can't get it out more quickly. We're getting it out as quickly as we possibly can. So, I would urge you, if you are so inclined, to engage, become part of that persecution project. If you would like to do so, you can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or you can write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. And if you're doing that, you want to put on your check, Persecution Project, okay? Or in a note, just so we know that those funds are dedicated to this particular project. Or you can go to the website, saveus.org. And there's a special place there where you can sign up for that persecution project. Every $250 that someone gives to that project, they will receive 10 copies of the book. Now, it's not going to be a tiny little book. It's a significant book. We have interesting endorsements that are rolling in from across the country now. People are talking about, leaders are talking about how timely this is, how needful it is. So, apparently, you know, I did hear from the Lord when we began writing this book last year, and it will see fruit, hopefully, come August. So, we trust you to follow up if you're so inclined. No pressure. It's an opportunity. Now, we were talking earlier, as we launched the program, about President Joe Biden signing away America's powers to the World Health Organization, called WHO, and its director general, whose first name is Tedros, and he has this long name. And Biden would be doing that through an executive agreement to link the United States to a pair of treaties that are under discussion related to worldwide pandemics. The purpose of this, friends, is to eliminate the sovereign decisions of the countries of the world in order for the World Health Organization and its one leader to be able to dictate to every country in the world what you must do with regard to health issues, and particularly if they want to call it a pandemic. And the World Health Organization is going to meet in Geneva. It's coming up. It's going to look at two things: amendments of the international health regulations and the adoption of this so-called pandemic agreement. And those two documents are so broad that they would give the head of WHO, Tedros, who gave China control over the United States, not just during a pandemic, but before, this would not be just world government. This would be totalitarian world government, because potentially Tedros could tell the United States to do anything he wants. And Biden knows that that he won't get votes from two-thirds of the Senate for signing the treaty as required by the Constitution, which means he intends to sign away America's powers without the Constitution and without the Senate approval. In other words, he is arrogant beyond belief. He is lawless beyond belief. He is intent on establishing a one-world government. So this document would give a blank check from the United States Treasury, would force the United States to adopt the One Health approach that covers all of life. That means the WHO could do whatever it wants, because this treaty body called the Conference of Parties not only has the right to interpret the agreement to any extent it wants, but it also has the right on its own to amend the treaty as they want. So, you say, what would happen if Mr. Biden were to sign this thing without the approval of the Senate? Well, here's what would happen. Biden's successor could withdraw from the agreement immediately, but it would take about 3 years to get out of the treaties with the World Health Organization. And by that time, no telling how much damage would be done. The man currently occupying the White House is exceedingly dangerous. It has nothing to do directly with the D behind his name. It has to do with his heart. His heart is desperately wicked, radically, openly contrary to the word, will, and the ways of God, to the doctrine even of the Roman Catholic Church. He is arrogant beyond belief. He believes that he is a law unto himself, and he is intent through his handlers and so on to bring about and lay the foundation for a one-world government in his term. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. It's tyranny. In Britain, the leaders are refusing to sign this document. Way too dangerous. Already 22 state attorneys general have sent a letter to Biden opposing the international health regulations. All 49 Republican U.S. senators sent a letter to Joe Biden calling on his administration to drop its support for this maneuver that would have America give up the nation's ability to make its own decisions about public health emergencies. And that's where we are. We're becoming Babylon. The world is becoming the reiteration of Babylon, even as the reiteration of the ancient Roman Empire is coming into its place through NATO, the EU and NATO, and the forces that have brought Russia and Ukraine in opposition to one another have facilitated the reestablishment of the ancient Roman Empire right before our eyes. It was in position when Jesus was born, and it will be in position when he returns. But at the same time, the reiteration of the spirit of Babylon is also being reborn. Babel, the Tower of Babel, become Babylon. Founded in Mesopotamia on the Euphrates River around 2000 BC, Nebuchadnezzar assumed power as king around 610 BC. As recorded in the Hebrew scriptures by Daniel the prophet, he was afforded two or three opportunities to embrace and recognize the God of Israel's creator, who alone reveals secrets and mysteries. But Nebuchadnezzar, the great king of Neo-Babylonian period, referred to Daniel's revelation of the king's mysterious, colossal vision of the head of gold and was trapped in the pride of his power. But Nebuchadnezzar was infected with the spirit of Babylon, He engaged in what for that time was a massive globalized city with a palace and a huge throne room fit for a god. He built many temples, the greatest of which was for the city's patron god Marduk, devilishly decorated with gold. And just north, he erected the huge step tower of Babylon, a ziggurat 7 stories tall, towering some 300 feet above the city. Yet in the Jewish mind, as well as that of the Christian world, Babylon became symbolic of man's prideful decadence and of God's judgment. As God warned through Jeremiah, "Thus shall Babylon sink and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring upon her." So the world has, in God's eyes, become Babylon. The very spirit of Babel and Babylon has systematically, like a spiritual virus, invaded the entire earth, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. This Babylon, friends, is described as the great whore in Revelation chapter 17, the great whore. It's also described as Mystery Babylon, the great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. For by your sorceries were all nations deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. In other words, this great whore, Mystery Babylon, was one of the greatest persecutors of all time. Somewhere around 60 million people lost their lives at the hands of the papacy, Mystery Babylon. So God says, "Come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, that you receive not of her plagues, for her sins have reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her, for she says in her heart, I said a queen, and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow." It's interesting, if you were to go to Orlando, Florida, right there along, I think it's Highway 4, Interstate 4, you would find right there down near Disneyland or Disney World, you would find a Roman Catholic church as you go north on the right, and it's called the Queen of Heaven. That's what it's called, the Queen of Heaven. Why do you think they chose that name? Why isn't it called the King of Heaven? No, she sits a queen, the great mother of harlots. Consider what's happening, friends. It is the merger of Rome and Babylon, the spirit of global government and global religion, all coming together for a one world order to shake its fist against the God of creation. Are you ready to stand in this evil day? Are you sure? Don't be too cocky about it. We need to be able to stand. That's why I wrote the book, Messiah, Unveiling the Mystery of the Ages, Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter, King of the Mountain, and then even the upcoming book, When Persecution Comes. I hope you'll avail yourself of it right there on our website, saveus.org.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.